Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
I don't think I can deal with it.
Well, you have to face it. You have to face it all.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 20, With This Ring. And now your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello.
Are you ready to finally hear Val's shocking, not at all predictable secret?
Yes, I've been ready. Let's go.
Well, you gotta wait until the 8 o'clock. We got 3 other plots to get through first, starting with our D plot. Steve has to teach his brother about sex. So this is the first time we've seen one brother independently. I don't know if it was like one of them started asking for more money so they could only afford to have on one at a time.
I think it's probably, I think we never see Austin again, actually.
Oh.
I would have to confirm this, and I will do so in a moment, but it's like, I'm sure that they couldn't afford them both, and Austin was not a spelling, and that was the end
sure.
of that.
All right, so Randy Spelling is back, a.k.a. Ryan. He has questions for Steve about some idiot girl named Katie, who Randy Spelling thinks may like him. He took a month to work up the nerve to ask her out, and now he wants to do something special. And Steve suggests the Santa Monica Pier, where Katie and Randy Spelling, like Steve and Claire once did, may get stuck on top of the Ferris wheel for hours. Randy Spelling is worried he's going to blow it, not in the sexy way. So Steve offers to go on a double date after a dumb CUTV thing we will get to. Also, continuity, clip 2.
You know, usually I talk to Austin about these things, but his idea of a special night is watching Topless Pizza Party 3.
You know, I was in. I had a small but pivotal role as a pizza delivery boy. Ivan Trotz is a very interesting filmmaker.
Remember that from last season?
Yeah. I do. And I have an update.
Yes.
We will see Austin again, but only twice.
Oh, all right. That's plenty. So at the pier, the very confident Katie asks Randy Spelling if he doesn't want to kiss her. And as he does so, Steve and Claire come around the corner and see them making out in the middle of the boardwalk. Steve says Randy Spelling has the Sanders touch. Claire rather darkly comments that she hopes Randy Spelling keeps the Sanders touch where Katie wants it. Randy Spelling asks to talk to Steve in private slash gross us all out in clip 3.
So what's the problem? Need some cash?
Steve, got any condoms?
You gotta be kidding me! Oh, this is a good day. This is a proud moment for me.
Well, I need to borrow a condom.
Rule number 22. You don't borrow condoms. Nobody wants it back.
Well, her parents are going out of town, and she invited me over to her house. That means we're going to be completely alone.
Tonight?
Tomorrow. But I need to be ready.
Oh, very good, Grasshopper.
Thanks for the tip, Dick.
Oh, my God. So wooden. I don't actually remember him being this terrible before.
Yeah, no, he's bad.
Like, he wasn't
really
good,
bad.
But this is real bad. Also, don't use my favorite number for that rule. It is a good rule, but it is gross and should be way higher up the list. Should be like 8. After no poets, no drummers.
All the way up to 8, right?
Yeah.
Wait, what are we talking about? Number 8 is don't reuse a condom?
Don't borrow condoms.
Yeah.
No one wants them back.
Okay. I don't know. It just seems like I might want it higher up.
All right.
Well, it depends on what
where
it's a list of.
It?
Like, if it's general sex rules, that seems reasonable. If it's specifically rules about condoms, yes, that should be the first and only rule, really.
Well, no, it should be rule number two. Rule number one, use them until everyone's been tested.
Sure. Cool.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, the next day,
comments,
Claire
Dave?
Pissily tells...
Just this.
The next day, Claire pissily tells Steve it's his responsibility to talk to Randy Spelling about sex. And when Randy Spelling comes down, Claire comments that tonight's the big night and he's embarrassed that Steve told her about it. And since Steve has ducked the job of having the sex talk with Randy Spelling, Claire asks how much Randy Spelling knows about sex and what he's gleaned from porn doesn't count. This finally spurs Steve to agree to talk to Randy Spelling after breakfast. And when after breakfast comes, Randy Spelling sits tensely waiting at the table while Steve procrastinates with the paper, finally relenting and starting the conversation. It's not great, but the upshot is Randy Spelling doesn't think he's ready, and Steve enthusiastically agrees that he should wait. The end. What was the point of any of that? God, what a waste of time.
Concur.
On to our C plot. Speaking of wastes of time, the David Donna love quadrangle continues happening. So Donna is still seeing Cliff on the side. She knows people think of her and David as one word, despite the two seasons they spent dating other people. That's me noting that, not her.
Yeah. Donna also, the one word is boring, not Donna and David, but Kay.
Yeah. Donna thinks that if David wanted to apologize to her for his shitty behavior at Valentine's Day, he could have. Claire doesn't think David really has anything to apologize for, but Donna says the Cliff situation was a misunderstanding. And Claire's like, it was, and now you're about to go on a date with him, which, fine. Doesn't have anything to do with David, really. But as they're leaving the pier, Cliff goes in for a kiss that Donna returns for a while before pulling away, and he guesses it's because of David. She says that she and David go back so far she doesn't want to hurt him. Cliff notes that she can hurt Cliff, but she says she doesn't want to hurt anybody. She doesn't know she should be playing around with Cliff, but this isn't a game for Cliff. He's not playing around at all and proves it with more kissing. Meanwhile, Chloe is noodling around on a keyboard at David's. He's been trying and failing to get in touch with Donna and assumes that she's out with Cliff. Chloe snorts that she doesn't know what Donna sees in Cliff. LOL. David's read on the situation is that he didn't do anything to make Donna mad, but Cliff came to town and Donna's all over him. Okay, A, it's called taking someone for granted, which you have done since you and Donna got together. B, again, and I hate to bring this up, but what evidence have we seen that David has in any way tried to change the way he relates to Donna since she was held hostage at gunpoint? But of course, Chloe sees an opening and says that if Donna's cheating on David, maybe he should just break up with her. And I guess Chloe didn't watch the infamous CU TV on broadcast on YouTube, because clip four.
No, it's not like that. She's not sleeping with him, believe me.
Why? Because she told you?
No. She's a virgin.
You're kidding me.
No, it's pretty important to her.
How do you feel about it?
I love her. I respect her wishes.
Like she respects you by going out with Cliff?
Come on, that's not fair.
Maybe not. But it's true.
Break up.
Well,
you hate her.
Yeah.
You're wrong, but you hate her.
Yeah.
Just fuck Chloe and then kill yourself. I'm so tired. So tired of David.
He's so bad. The next day, Donna chirpily confides to Kelly that she's not sure which guy she likes more, not really seeming like she's particularly on the horns of an agonizing dilemma, although she does make one very true observation in clip five.
With David, everything's just always difficult.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Because he sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kelly agrees that Cliff is gorgeous, but suggests that maybe Donna's mad at David because he wasn't there for her. And I hate that Kelly, the psychology idiot, has to be the one to have figured this out. But here we go. Clip six.
It's the Emily Valentine syndrome. Brandon was with her the night I was in the fire.
That's right. Just like David was with Chloe when I was taken hostage.
We get it. It's a preposterous soap opera. Oh my God, they're so blasé about it. You know, like when I was taken hostage, as if you're saying like, you know, like when I got that parking ticket.
That's not the only time this attitude will become evident, but let's just move along.
Indeed. Donna asks whether Kelly has forgiven Brandon for that. Kelly doesn't know. We'll come back to it, as Sarah said. So Chloe gave her demo to Luther Vandross's manager, who wants them to go to New York. David whines that he can't, and Chloe sarcastically says she forgot about him needing to stay in town for Donna to make a fool of him. And he whines some more that he thought they were going to take things slow, meaning Chloe's career, at which point she unzips her stupid top and says she's tired of taking things slow. He stops her. Unbelievably, she claims she can give him what he wants, but he snips that she doesn't know what he wants. And so Chloe and her satin Veronica Secret bra will go to New York by themselves. And of course, this is when Donna shows up. David tells Claire, Chloe to go wait in the bedroom. She thinks that means he changed his mind, and David snaps, "Just do it." So if you don't know how this is going to go, you are as dumb as David. And he opens the door to Donna, who says she thought they should talk. He agrees, but doesn't move, forcing her to ask if she can come in, which is when Chloe calls out to David from the bedroom. He claims they were working. So, of course, she comes out in her bra, hilariously does not give a fuck. And that's when Donna stomps away. And that's where we leave things with them. So predictable. I kind of admire Chloe's moxie, because that is what you should do. Go wait in the bedroom. How about fuck you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Not that this is in character from what we've seen of her, but she's been so boring to date that this development is fine.
Indeed. Well, it gets worse from here, but that was it for the C plot. All right, God, let's get into it. B plot, crisis over Kelly's ring. Finally, we discover there's something worse than Brandon's writing and Dylan's writing. Clip 7.
Valerie gave me this journal for Christmas. I thought I'd start it for the new year, but I never got around to it. It's kind of ironic, I guess. Now that I have more time to write, I don't really have that much to say. I never thought I'd be this alone. I mean, I know I'm not. I have my friends and my family. But I feel alone. What do they say? Be careful what you wish for. It might come true. When Brandon proposed to me and Dylan wanted to take me around the world, I chose to be on my own. Well, that's what I got. Dylan's in London with Brenda. And Brandon, I know he cares for me, but Brandon's in love with Tracy.
Holy shit, she loves cliches. My God.
Yeah. And I mean, look, the only reason this journal is being used is so that it can be in front of her uterus, but yeah. Find another way, writers, because oh, this is terrible.
Oof. Okay. So elsewhere, Brandon is running a meetings plan. The news show's 100th broadcast. Tracy is distracted and cold, and the curly haired producer we love has to fill the enthusiasm gap. Afterwards, Tracy tries to talk to Brandon, and Brandon is a bitch about it in clip 8.
What was that all about?
What was that all about? I don't know if you noticed, but I was having a production meeting over here, and I'd appreciate a little support.
Okay. Well, maybe you could give me some tips on how I'm supposed to act. You know, I've never really been in this situation before where my boyfriend's keeping an engagement ring for somebody else.
You think I should have brought that up at the production meeting?
Well, when were you going to bring it up? Or was that, don't worry, it doesn't mean anything, all the explanation I was going to get?
Trace, I knew that we were going to have to talk about this. I've been thinking about it all week.
Yeah, well, obviously I'm just not as good at keeping things in little compartments like you are.
I just thought it would be best if we talked about it after the show, that's all.
You didn't think it was important enough to tell me. You know, maybe I shouldn't even be there at all. That way you can control both sides of the conversation like you always do anyway.
You know, Trace, if you don't want to do this, that's fine.
You have no idea how much I don't want to do this. But if you mean the show, don't worry about it. I'll be there. With bells on.
Oh, Tracy, finally, a personality. I will not get used to it, but I'm glad to see it.
Although, again, and I said this in our last full-length episode, did they just, like... He was like, it doesn't mean anything. Don't worry about it. And then they just went to their Roomba charging stations again.
Right.
Until this conversation.
For a week. Yeah.
which he was apparently fine with, which again should be everything that she needs to know about the relationship, namely that he doesn't want to be in it or care about it.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm enjoying the burns, and that was a really good one. Someone in the writer's room totally felt us in advance 20 years ago because, man, that was cold.
Yeah.
But both of you shut up. Seriously. Yeah. Like, just break up so you can get back together with Kelly so we can barf ourselves inside out and die, and this will be over.
Well, speaking of barfing, then the Chancellor is on camera for the 100th episode taping, giving Brandon a plaque for the occasion while Brandon wears his customary shitty smug look, which you can see in the visual aids.
And gigantic suit jacket.
Sorry. Of course, the only kind he has. Unless this is a weekly show, and honestly, even then, this is an extremely dumb milestone to commemorate, but whatever. All of Brandon's dumb friends are there to spectate the most boring thing they've all done together this whole season, possibly in their lives. Brandon takes the plaque to praise the efforts of the cast and crew, letting Tracy stand in for all of them since she's the only one with makeup on. Ha ha. Tracy professionally and smoothly signs off, setting up a cute Chancellor flub. And as soon as the camera's off, Tracy takes off her mic and stalks off. And as she and Claire, and sorry, as Donna and Claire prepare to leave before the party gets going, Donna says this, clip 9.
After everything that's happened, this place is kind of creepy to me.
Yeah, way to hang a lantern on how stupid it is that Donna is even there. Like, I would never go back to that station again. What the fuck?
Why would you? And, like, the conversation opened with David not being there, and then she gets around to remembering that she was held hostage there and is like, oh, P.S., we should go. Yeah, you should. If only to get away from Brandon, who did fucking nothing to get you out of the hostage situation.
I know.
Why? It's CUTV. No one cares.
So in the hall, Brandon and Kelly have a very awkward conversation, made even more awkward when Kelly notes that she hardly ever sees him anymore. Brandon has no response except what are, I guess, his sex eyes. I don't know. You be the judge. They're in the visual aids.
They're the same as his flat loathing eyes. Kid's not even trying. It's bad.
It's true. So to fill the silence, Kelly says she should have him and Tracy over for a barbecue. And Jason Priestley is vamping his acceptance when Tracy comes out holding the plaque for some reason. Still sees Brandon and Kelly talking with a whole person's width of space between them. And of course, looks stricken and betrayed. She comes over and is gracious to Kelly's compliment, since none of this is Kelly's fault after all. And then tells Brandon that she is leaving in clip 10.
What are you talking about?
We were supposed to talk after the broadcast, but obviously this conversation is more important to you.
Oh, did I get in the middle of something here?
No, you didn't.
Anyway, I'm going to go. And here, you can have your precious plaque back.
I gave it to you.
Well, you're the one with all the integrity. Isn't that what the Chancellor said? You know, if he's so virtuous, why can't he tell the truth? I guess it's hard to be honest with other people if you can't be honest with yourself.
Oh, keep it up. Keep it up, Galien.
Also, the plaque, like, give it to the curly haired producer. She's the only one who, as far as we can tell, is worth a damn around here.
Including in a hostage situation. Keep in mind, she was the one who bolted and was like, nah, I'm not doing this. So,
yeah. Honestly, only after Kelly tells Brandon to go after Tracy does he actually do it. And then the fight is continuing in Tracy's dorm room. Brandon snaps that he wasn't keeping the ring because he's been waiting for Kelly to come back. But when Tracy asks why he is keeping it, all he can think to say is that he doesn't know. And Tracy hotly tells him he should think about it for once in his life. He's like, what's that supposed to mean? Well, Tracy explains, and Brandon's response is sensitive and reasonable. JK, clip 11.
You can't let somebody think you love them if you don't.
I know that. But why can't you realize you're just upset because you're embarrassed?
I'm upset because you're cheating on me.
That's ridiculous.
Just tell me if you love her.
Trace.
It's a simple question.
I wish I had a simple answer.
Well, at least you had the decency not to lie to me. Goodbye, Brandon.
Bye.
And then there's some splendid ugly crying. Ooh. You will see it in the visual aids.
Ooh. You sure will. I made
she
a gif.
And
if you thought her ugly cry from the hostage episode was bad, yikes, she's been keeping some even uglier crying in reserve.
This is like the tragedy mask. face. It's not good.
Oh, Jesus Christ. More from Kelly's dumb diary. She's wondering whether you only get so many chances for fate to take its course. And if she and Brandon are meant to be together, why aren't they? And after things turn back to Kelly and Brandon, Kelly admits to Donna that she's been thinking about Brandon a lot in clip 12.
Thinking that maybe you want to get back together with him?
It doesn't matter what I think. I'm not going to do anything about it.
Well, that's stupid. If you still love him, you have to tell him.
I have told him. After Colin, after Susan. He knows how I feel. If he wants to do anything about it.
This bitch is so conceited, she really thinks all she'd have to do is indicate her interest and he would come back, and she's probably right, unfortunately.
Yeah, on this show, sigh.
Donna says that's stupid. If Kelly still loves him, she has to tell him, and Brandon knows how he feels. It's on him to do anything about it. Brandon, meanwhile, is moping about his love life at the Peach Pit and vaguely confides to Nat about it. No one cares what Nat thinks, but Brandon's take is that if Kelly wanted things to be different between them, she would say so. So great, we're at a stalemate. Yay.
Yep.
Sorry. His takeaway from all this is that he needs to return the ring. And then Kelly is morosely pretending to read when Tracy pops by for an uncomfortable conversation. Kelly is starting to explain her conversation with Brandon the previous night, but Tracy interrupts to say that she and Brandon broke up, and Kelly says she's sorry. Tracy's like, are you? Kelly insists that she is, and Tracy apologizes and then tells her about finding the ring. And Kelly is stunned to find out that Brandon still had it and tells Tracy she's really sorry. And now that Tracy's on her way out again, starting to like her in clip 13.
Look, Kelly, I came here to do the noble thing. To tell you that I'd bow out gracefully and let the royal couple assume their rightful place. But I can't do it.
You love him, don't you?
Do you?
Yes.
So do I. This isn't fair. You know, you turned him down. You broke up with him, but you never let him go. Love is supposed to make people happy, Kelly. Are you happy? Brandon and I could be happy together. I know we could. But you have to make up your mind. Once and for all.
You sure do, bitch.
Oh, yes. And actually, this works because Kelly heads straight over to the Walsh house, but Steve tells her that Brandon went to return the ring. He doesn't know where, except it's some German jewelry store and in a city the size of Los Angeles.
God.
Before Google, Kelly is still confident she'll find it. And then it's the worst thing that's ever fucking happened. Brandon returns to the jewelry store where he bought the ring. And out from the back comes Jason Priestley in high school play caliber old age makeup. You can see it in the visual aids. Other than the accent, he does nothing to alter his voice, and it's so bad, I'm furious. Clip 14.
Back again? Pardon me? I don't forget. A couple of years ago, you came in here. You bought a ring. Then last year, you came in again. You wanted to return it. That's right. How'd you remember that? That is my business. You couldn't return the ring because you still love the girl. I think I'm ready now, sir. Okay. Do you want cash or maybe an exchange? Take a look in the case. Maybe for the other girl.
I don't think there is another girl.
Don't tell me my business. In love, not in love, halfway between the two. I've seen it before.
How do you know so much?
It is not magic. 35 years of making love into metal, you get a feeling for such things.
That took years off my life.
Hey, what is that? That is nothing. That is just my magic merger bag.
What? Priestley also directed this episode. So he's a producer on it. He directed it and he played jeweler Clink and his shitty self.
And he even brays at himself. Like,
the
even his scene partner is his own self. He still does that awful tone.
How?
It's terrible.
Why?
Like,
of all the vanity things that you as a director and producer can do, that?
Yeah.
Like, why not give Brandon a, like, race car subplot? That's what you're into in real life.
Yeah.
Are you also into terrible accents?
Oh, my God. So bad. Anyway, Brandon looks at the case and says he wants to buy a bracelet, and the jeweler asks if he's ready to exchange his past for his future. And at just this moment, Kelly is somehow rolling up outside because she did find it, seeing Brandon through the window and hiding. And inside slash under the boom, yes, the boom is back. Brandon regards the ring for a while and then snaps the box closed. He says he can't do it until he knows it's really over between him and Kelly. The jeweler will hold the bracelet until Brandon figures it out or until someone else wants it, I assume he says under his breath. So Brandon comes out and Kelly is there waiting to ambush him with what she heard from Tracy. Brandon says Tracy shouldn't have done that, like he has any standing, and clip 15.
What are you doing here?
I came to return the ring.
Good.
Good?
Good that you, returned it. Good. That's what I came to talk to you about.
You came to talk to me about returning the ring?
Yeah, if that's what you want to do, you should. We shouldn't.
We can't.
Anymore. This is too much.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yes, it is.
Kill yourselves. Ugh.
I was just gonna say that. Oh, God, shut up.
We shouldn't. We can't. You're not Heathcliff and Kathy. Just get over it.
Their lips are also 3 inches apart. Like, you're on a street. You're blocking the sidewalk in what was totally not Westwood. It was like the German Tudor Renaissance set on the lot.
Yeah.
So, like, every building looks like Europe. I'm sure someone in a Shakespeare rough went through the background of the scene, but they were shot in such unflattering close-up that, of course, we didn't see it. And it's like, just go, stop. Oh, God, I hate this subplot so much. Hate it.
I think it was a real street. There are streets in Beverly Hills that have that kind of, like, faux Tudor styling on stuff. God knows why. Because I think the street noise was too loud for it to be the lot. But anyway, you tell us what you think in the comments about this. Don't tell us anything if you think about the German jewelry.
Yeah, oh,
you're traumatized enough. Anyway, Brandon decides the play is to go to Tracy's dorm room and be a bitch about it in clip 16.
You told Kelly.
I'm sorry, I had to.
Not as sorry as I am. I returned the ring.
You did?
Yeah.
Not as sorry as I am, here's a present. Ugh.
It's so gavon, this bracelet, too. Blech. Like, you can practically
you can
see it's
leech.
Already starting to turn the box green. Like, cool, Brandon.
Totally.
Twat.
Yeah, and also, like, however, if that's what you exchanged the ring for, like, I hope you also got a shitload of store credit, because that's one cheap engagement ring if that's all you could get for it.
Also, like, I would be... Like, a bracelet seems a little, like, after all of this, especially.
Yeah.
Seems a little, like, impersonal and frenzy. Would you agree?
Yes. He that could just as easily have been a gift for his mother.
Yeah.
Anyway, cut to Kelly walking sadly on the beach, back to her shitty journal in clip 17.
I bought a gift today for someone I love. Maybe I paid too much for something no one will ever see, but I didn't want anyone else to have it.
she's wearing the ring on a chain. She bought her own engagement ring back because, in case you forgot, Kelly chooses her.
Because that's the someone she loves. And apparently no one will ever see it, even though it's barely below her neckline. Yeah. And is on a visible chain. Like, if you really wanted no one to see it, you would have thrown it into the sea along with yourself tied to a sack of bricks that also contains your shitty gurnal. Shut the fuck up, everyone. We're still not done with this episode. Help me.
Nope. Moving on to our A plot. Val's secret revealed fucking finally. So a black and white montage.
As it were.
Yeah, sorry. A black and white montage takes us from Val having sex with Tom, we presume, to flashes of her dad, and finally to her pulling a hand out of the covers and seeing it covered in very red blood. She wakes up in color with a start. Tom sits up and knows she's had a nightmare, evidently just the latest of many. And he suggests that she go back to sleep, but her mother's coming back from San Francisco today, and Val doesn't think she can take it, as we heard up top. And Tom tells her she has to face it. Face it all. And indeed, Abby does come back and straight into a hostile reception from Val under the boom. Val snits that she's surprised Abby came back at all. She must really want the money for the house. And Abby claims she wants them to get along, but Val's not going to give her that, nor is she going to sign the papers. And in that case, Abby will return to Buffalo tomorrow and stay in a hotel in the meantime. So she's not 100% broke, at least. Tom tries to find out if Val had a real talk with her mother, but Val says she couldn't do it and orders him to back off. And then it's time for another black and white nightmare. Val's in bed when an older dude comes in and kisses her and asks if she's having a bad dream. And she says, yes, daddy, but in a little girl's voice. He offers to tell her a story, and it is very creepy in clip 18.
Once upon a time, there was a little girl who loved her daddy so much. She made her daddy do all kinds of terrible things.
I mean, up until now, this has been like an insult to survivors of childhood sexual abuse by relatives. And
yes.
Then it like took a turn where I was like, oh, yeah, that felt a little real.
Ugh. They really go for it, I have to say, considering how like cute they've been about it all season. And really, since they started with her like flashbacks of finding his body and stuff, they don't hold back.
No, they do not. Gross.
So she wakes up at this point and tells Tom she has to go deal with this. So off she goes to Abby's hotel room to have it out. It is rough. Clip 19.
Well, speak to me now. It has to be in the middle of the night.
Well, you were always such a sound sleeper.
What do you mean?
Well, you must have been. To be able to sleep through the night while your husband was coming into my room.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about rape, Mother. Incest, child abuse, our family, your husband, your daughter. Does that ring any bells?
You're accusing your father of... How dare you?
That's right. Defend him in the grave. It's not like you have to care about me at all.
I was married to him for 20 years. I think I knew him better than anyone.
I guess you didn't know him as well as you thought.
Your father had his faults. But he was a good man.
Victor Malone was a vicious son of a bitch, and if you didn't know it, you were blind.
You were always wild, always in trouble.
You know what? As much as I hated him, you were worse than he was. You could have stopped it. You could have stopped him coming into my room, not...
Go to hell!
That was a slap.
I was 11 years old.
Eesh.
I 11 think that slap feels- might have been real.
Yeah.
That did not look like a fight call slap.
Yeah.
I'd also like to say Tiffany Thiessen is doing really well. This writing is not great, but... Mm-hmm. She's doing pretty well with it. It's a lot. She's handling it better than most of the rest of the cast could be expected to. Fortunately, it's her. So, yeah, I mean, we've known this was coming for a while, so I'm glad that they're getting on with it. But just one positive note amidst all this drag, that she's doing a good job.
Yeah. Also, the fact that it started when she was 11 is like a really especially harsh detail. Eek.
Yeah. And that her mom is like, you were always wild and getting in trouble. Like, I don't know. Read a magazine ever? Understand how this shit works? Mom?
Yeah. Ugh. So the next day, Abby finds Tom at the Peach Pit after dark and says she needs his help with Val. But when she starts to tell him why, she stops herself and says she can't do this. And as she's turning to leave, Tom tells her he already knows. And Val comes in behind them as Abby says she doesn't want to believe it, but she guesses that she has to. And now she knows why Val has hated her all this time and insists that she never knew. And that this Val emerges, and we have our final clip.
Why didn't she tell me?
Well, maybe I was afraid I'd get the same reception as I got last night, Mother.
Valerie.
Or that I thought it was my own fault.
How can you say that?
You know, when it happened the first time, I was so scared that I didn't tell anybody about it. And then I didn't tell anybody about it, and it happened again, and I thought I'd get into trouble. Besides, he told me you said I had to.
Ugh.
Tom.
Would you leave us alone, please?
No. He was there for me when I needed him, and I need him now.
What do you mean he was there for you?
When Valerie told me what was going on, I wanted to kill a son of a bitch. But I didn't. On one condition.
Tom said if I didn't go to the police that he would.
But you didn't.
I told Daddy. I said if he didn't leave, or if he didn't get some help, that I was going to go to the police. He shot himself that night.
Oh my God.
And that's not all I feel guilty about. I'm glad he did it. That's what I feel guilty about. Glad the bastard's dead.
Yikes.
Woof.
Also, he said you said I had to, like, ooh, God. Like, this is what I mean when I say, like, they're not trying to soft soap this at all.
No.
Like, this is a lot of.
Yeah. And this is what abusers do. This is how they silence kids. So gross. Realistically gross for once with this Keisho.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they did an okay job with when they tried this with the Sue Scanlon storyline too, that also had a grooming older relative that had been doing shit from a very young age and was like about to move on to another target.
Ugh. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, this is gross. Let's wrap it up. Val returns to her mother's hotel room to say that she changed her mind. She'll sign the papers. Her dad is dead. They should let the past die with him. But Abby has also changed her mind. She couldn't live there now. And so they are going to sell it. Val has something else to tell Abby. She believes that Abby didn't know. And Abby cries that she should have. And they hug. And Val comes back to the club to report on recent events to Tom. Abby's already on her way to the airport. And Val needs that part of her life over with and never to think about it again. Not sure that's exactly how you should deal with it, but whatever. She says she loves Tom and always has, but that means him too. And when she looks in Tom's eyes, she sees her dad coming into her room, touching her, dead on the bathroom floor. Doesn't really line up with how horny she's been for Tom since he came to town, but okay.
Yeah.
Bottom line is that having Tom in her life is too much. He's glad that she worked things out with her mother. She says she couldn't have done it without him, and he says at least he's good for something. And after one last drink, they never saw him again.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, let's close it up.
Not.
Who's the MVP?
I'm going to say Tom.
Yeah.
I've had little use for him, but he really did stick by her and was very gracious about her being like, okay, well, now that I'm all better, bye. Like, okay. Like, what is he supposed to say? His contract's up, so he's out. But if it turns out that he really was her like champion and protector, then good for him. And also, everyone else in this episode is a fucking idiot. And as much as I'd like to give it to Tracy, she fucking takes Brandon back for a bracelet that he got at the AMPM. No. So, Tom.
Yep, that's fair. I agree with all of that. Least valuable player.
Oh,
Jason Priestley, not Brandon. casting himself as the jeweler.
I mean, at least he didn't cast himself as Victor Malone, because that's my LVP. Son, you are gross. And I'm a foul. We're glad you're dead. Bye.
All right, fair. User submit a challenge. This comes from our friend at Kim Reed on Twitter, also our colleague, host of Little House on the Podcast and the Inner Circle podcast, co-host of the Inner Circle on this very podcast network.
And the creator of the original challenge.
That's right. Here. She was. Yes. The Kim challenge, the Mad, Bad and Dangerous to Know challenge was her origination. You're right. I forgot about that. It's been so long since Dylan was on the show. Oh my God. Anywho, she writes that we should come up with five ways the episode would be different if it were filmed in 2017. I have two right up top. Number one, there would be no CUTV. It would be a web broadcast. And number two, there would be no plaque for their 100th broadcast because state schools do not have the budget for that kind of nonsense anymore.
Kelly's journal would be a blog.
Oh, God, it would.
Or a like Facebook group.
Yes. Fit Kelly is 100% the kind of person who would be on Facebook, like vague booking about fake friends.
Oh, totally. Worst. Subtweeting.
Well, it'd be easier for her to find the jeweler, but that ended up not being a problem at all. And number five, Steve would just probably find some kind of blog post to give Randy Spelling to teach him about sex rather than even pretend to try and tell him anything that he personally knows.
Oh, yeah, true. Wasn't a porno, though.
Here's a challenge maybe Sarah will do better at. Five sex rules between number 8 and number 22.
Well, all of mine are like way above number 8. Like, don't try it in the shower or bathtub. Don't try it in the pool. No drummers, no poets, no married guys.
Number 16, this way up.
Number 20, no one believes that it, quote, just slipped in there.
Number 17, expiration dates are real. Pay attention to them.
Spread eagle.
Number 19, if you have time to have sex, you have time to get a towel first. Oh, are we done? Okay. Next time on Again With This, probably more sex rules. Also, Dick is dead, Donna is indecisive, and Claire and Kelly say Das Svidaniya to yet another wheezy attempt at a, quote, humorous D-plot. You'll be overdosing on Tums when you peep our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those on our website at previously.tv. You can find that website on Twitter at previouslytv. And you can follow this podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm resentful second choice, Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is explosive diarist Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Black and White Flashback of Great Import, David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. Take the guesswork out of landscaping with our free
easy-to-use design program. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Get started on your dream landscape now. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your project started today. Save big money at
Menards. Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.